Hello and welcome back to Supernatural, where we're on a quest to make the extraordinary ordinary and unlock the greatness that lives in every human being. Thanks for joining us. My guest today is Taylor DeBoer, a truly one-of-a-kind holistic nutritionist who specializes in gut health and chronic illness. Taylor holds a master's of science in health coaching and applied nutrition, but her work is really the result of discovering her own solutions after being diagnosed with a multitude of autoimmune diseases, including Lyme disease. Today, she teaches others how to nurse their bodies to feel their best and is a living example of the joy that's possible when we step out and claim our best life. Welcome, Taylor. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, as anyone who follows you on social media or anyone watching this on video can see, you are radiant, you're vibrant, there's a light behind your eyes that's a rare sight these days. So how did you get here? Take us through your story and give us kind of a quick overview of what's brought you to where you are.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. As we'll eventually get to, I am a lover of sunlight. So so a little bit about my story. If I really go back to kind of what initially sparked my interest in nutrition, I struggled with an eating disorder at around age like 15, 16, and I kind of struggled with it through college. Mostly it was anorexia. I was never formally diagnosed as anorexic, but looking back, I was severely under eating. I was like over exercising. And my dad passed away when I was 14. And that really kind of, dealing with the grief of that, it was very sudden. It was a plane crash. So, we were totally blindsided. And being this, a pivotal moment in your teenage years, that's kind of how I coped. And I remember I read this book in college, my junior year of college, and it was called Unprocessed by Megan Kimball. And it's about this woman, and she goes through this entire year of eating entirely unprocessed. If she wants to eat something, she has to make it from scratch. And it wasn't a book about plant-based versus vegan. It was just like, if she wanted something, she had to make it. And I really opened my eyes to what goes into our food and how many things that we purchase are so heavily processed and so far removed from what the original source of that food is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so then I kind of had this light bulb moment of like, oh my gosh, like I need to nourish my body. Like I can't keep living in like this deficit, especially being someone who at the time I was running like 8 to 10 miles a day, all while probably eating less than 1,000 calories. I mean, it was not a sustainable lifestyle. And, so at that point, I was a junior in college. I was almost done with my bachelor's degree, which was in psychology. I thought I wanted to be a therapist for children. But I was like, all right, let's just finish. Like, I don't want to have to like change majors and like take longer to finish, which in retrospect, if anyone is in college listening to this, take longer if you want. Like, there's no rush to finish. Like, I should have just switched majors. But I was hell-bent on finishing in 4 years, so I did. And then I took like a nutrition certification program just to see if I was really interested in nutrition, if I wanted to pursue it as a career, and I loved it. So I found a master's program that I was able to get into, and I was like, all right, we're gonna do this. And then a month before I got into my master's program, or before I started my master's program, I was diagnosed with Lyme disease. And at that point, I had been sick for about a year. I had a terrible skin condition all over my arms, my legs, my torso. I had been extremely tired, joint pain. I was dealing with PCOS. Like, I had some random diagnoses, but they were like, I'm like, but that still doesn't explain the skin. That still doesn't explain how tired I am. And of course, it was like, well, maybe you're just depressed. Maybe you're just tired. I'm like, I'm not depressed. I'm not just tired. Or it was like, oh, it's probably stress then. I'm like, I'm stressed because you're telling me it's stress. Like, and so eventually I kind of asked my doctor to test me for mono and for Lyme, and both came back positive, which mononucleosis is Epstein-Barr virus. And I did have that in high school. And obviously it could come back. You're a carrier always for Epstein-Barr. And so I got the diagnosis. I, at the time, hadn't quite started my program, and my master's program was a little bit more holistic health oriented. And at the time I was still very much passionate about holistic health, not to the degree I am now, but I knew enough to where I was like, well, I don't want to treat the Lyme with a normal doctor. So I went and saw a naturopathic physician who specialized in Lyme, and I did test positive for all the Lyme co-infections. And I don't know if she was intimidated by that like the fact that I had them all, but she was very insistent that I go on antibiotics, and she had me on them for 12 to 14 months. I thought it was like a year or even like 10 months, but when I look back, I'm like, oh, that was 14 months. It was like an August to a December, like a following December. So, it was a long time, and antibiotics are terrible. After the 14 months, I was like, I'm not feeling any better. Everything's worse. We were closely monitoring my labs. My candida levels were off the charts. My Lyme, none of my Lyme numbers improved. And I'm like, why am I staying on this? Like, I feel like shit. And she keeps telling me to stop eating fruit. And I'm like, I'm not eating any fruit. So I don't know why my candida is crazy. Like, so at that point, I was a year into my master's program. And so I was like, I think I know enough now to figure this out on my own. And so through, you know, a lot of my own personal like research outside of what I was even learning, because I really pushed for the fruit forward view in anything that I wrote, like any papers, I kind of stumbled across how, you know, fats and protein make the perfect environment for candida to thrive. And if you're eating high protein, high fat, candida is not going to get under control. And so I was like, so then that was like the pivotal moment for me where it was like, I can eat fruit. I can. And so I started adding more fruit in and really pulling out protein and fats. And, you know, that was hard because I was into weight training at the time. I mean, I still am, but at the time I was, and everything in the fitness world is like high protein. So it was strange to kind of have to like stop drinking your protein shakes. Don't eat at the time I was eating bison, like a lot of ground bison. So I stopped, and it took some dismantling of these things I had been conditioned to think. But once I started feeling the benefits from the fruit and feeling better, there was no turning back. And so I do tell people that I didn't really seek out to be fruit based. It just kind of happened to find me. And the more I added more fruit in, the better I felt. And then I was like, oh my gosh, there's people out here who eat mostly fruit, and like, let's try that. And it was like, that is truly where I feel my best. And, you know, the Lyme is in remission, everything, you know, I feel so much better. My skin is like, you know, doing great. So there's certainly something to be said about all of that.
Wow, that's so interesting. And I think being that you're a nutritionist, let's start with the diet. I think that's a logical point to kind of launch this conversation. So what does your diet look like these days? And kind of paint us a picture of what a typical day of eating looks like.
Yeah, so my diet, I guess by, you know, traditional standards, is very unconventional. But I love being unconventional at this point. So I start my day with tons of hydration. So that it looks like lemon water and juice. And then I usually have fruit for breakfast after that. So right now it's obviously peak time for fruit. We're in the middle of August. And so it's either a papaya. This morning I had a golden dew melon. It might be some other type of melon variety, honeydew, or watermelon. Although I don't do a lot of watermelon for breakfast because I typically work out in the morning and it's so much water, it kind of tends to weigh me down. But melons, dragon fruits, if I have them, I love dragon fruits. But yeah, basically any type of fruit for breakfast. And then, I usually will go work out. After my workout, I have some like fresh raw coconut water. And then for lunch, I will have a smoothie typically, just because it's easy. At that point, I'm usually seeing clients, so I can like drink it while I'm on calls with clients. And so my smoothie usually has anywhere from 3 to 6 bananas, some berries, maybe some dragon fruit as well. Maybe I'll do mango or something with cherries. But again, we are in summer, so I've been doing a little less smoothies if my schedule allows it. And I'll maybe have another melon for lunch or a papaya. Or dragon fruits for lunch or something. Today for lunch, I did have a watermelon with passion fruit. So that's great. That's one of my favorite combos. And then in the afternoon, I have another juice. So like I have my juice right now. So this is pineapple juice. Sometimes I'll do watermelon juice during citrus season, lots of mandarin or tangerine juice. And then dinner is really where I bring in more variety. So at this point, I've pretty much had fruit all day. And then by dinner, I'll have, you know, vegetables or some potatoes. Sometimes I'll do rice. But right now, again, it's summer, it's warm. So the last thing I want is something cooked. Like my body just is like, okay, give us more raw living foods. So right now I'm on a kick of a carrot and purple cabbage salad. Like I just shred a bunch of carrots and purple cabbage, and then I top it with green onions and a bunch of cilantro. I throw in some serrano peppers in there. And then I make a little dressing with some tahini and maple syrup and lime juice and a bit of coconut aminos, and I top that with it. So there's not a ton of ingredients, but it's been super refreshing and hitting the spot. So I think I've had that salad for like a week straight now. I'm kind of fixated on it.
I do that too. I get on a kick and it's like you go with that thing and you ride it until you're tired of it and you don't want it, and then you switch to something else. But
exactly.
My diet looks a lot like what you're doing. I think we've pretty much settled on the same thing. It's a juice in the morning, usually hydrate, juicy fruits, melons, grapes, that sort of thing. I'm usually a fruit till dinner, and then it's either maybe a big salad, maybe it's something heavy like bananas. But I think I've been doing this not quite as long as you, so my body is a little bit less adjusted, so I am still doing the cooked now and then, the potatoes, maybe an occasional grain.
Yeah.
And are you using any herbs or supplements, anything to support you right now or just natural?
Yeah, significantly less supplements than when I was really healing from Lyme disease. So, you know, like I will tell people, because people always ask, well, what are you taking? What should I take? You know, it depends where you're at in your journey and what type of support you're looking for. I mean, I was taking a lot up until like the last year or two, and I was finally like, I think I can scale back. What am I doing? Why am I still taking all this? So I drastically scaled back. And I also kind of will like sometimes look at some of my vitamins or like liquid tinctures and think like, do I feel I need it? Like, you know, and obviously in the wintertime I do up some of my herb supplements because, you know, it's just nice to have the extra support for your immune system. But currently my like go-to supplements is Living Silica. I love Living Silica. And it's like a liquid, doesn't really have any flavor. And Living Silica boosts our body's natural collagen production. So rather than taking a collagen supplement, which really doesn't work, Living Silica helps our body produce its own collagen. And silica is found most highly in watermelon. It's in all fruit, but watermelon has the highest concentration of silica. And yeah, it's great for our bones, our joints, our ligaments, our hair, skin, nails, all the things. So I take that every day. I usually put it in my smoothie, or sometimes like it comes in a bottle and like you can squirt it into your smoothie, or I'll just put it directly in my mouth. Like it doesn't taste like anything. It's like water. So you take like a tablespoon or whatever. So there's the Living Silica. And then I take Spermidine, which is like a Japanese type of like seaweed or kelp or something. I should be able to better explain it. But it helps with like cell autophagy. It's great for like anti-aging. It's also great for like your hair health and all of that. So I take that. And then I take B12 sometimes. I don't take it every day. I've had my B12 levels checked. And last time it was checked, it was like very high end of normal. So I'm like, I'm clearly not lacking in B12. So that's really it. But in the winter, maybe I'll take some zinc just for some, you know, immune support when everyone around me is getting sick. So.
Yeah, I'll have to check silica out. I really don't know that much about silica. And the sea kelp, I would also imagine, helps with iodine, which is usually a concern for vegans, people on a plant-based diet, which is great. And yeah, I notice I don't really want that many supplements nowadays. I think kind of what you can attest to is over the long term, as the body adjusts, usually we see things stabilize. And even I think with things like B12, my understanding is it can actually be produced in the gut by our friendly bacteria. And it's just a matter of, can we reabsorb that if we're living in a healthy body? So
100%.
I want to get into now a little bit of the why. This can be seen as a very unconventional and extreme diet, I think, if you're unfamiliar with it. I know if you had told me all this 5 years ago, I would have thought you were completely off the rails. But you know, can you talk a little bit about the reasoning behind this? Why do we go fruit-based? Why do we go high raw?
Yeah. So, first of all, like why go fruit-based is, as humans, we technically are frugivores. If you go back far enough, you know, we originally lived in the tropical parts of the globe, and what grows in abundance in tropical climates is fruit. There's fruit trees. It grows so easily. And as humans, like, it's so much easier to go out and pick a papaya or a mango from a tree and eat that than have to like sharpen a spear and go hunt fish or go hunt for an animal. Like, you know, my belief is, okay, sure, humans can eat meat. I'm not against people who eat meat. And I do believe that if it wasn't for humans being able to consume meat, the human species wouldn't have survived today. Like, as humans branched out across the globe, obviously you're in areas where there is no fruits or, you know, maybe vegetation to eat. So you have to then kill animals to survive. So obviously there's a place for that in, you know, the evolution of humans. But I think as far as going back of why eat fruit and why humans are designed is we thrive in tropical climates. I mean, think about the summer. Everyone typically feels better in the summer. There's more sunlight. The weather's warmer. And obviously in tropical climates, you don't have a lot of seasonal fluctuations. It stays pretty, you know, pretty much mild the same year round. So that is usually what I'll tell people why you should consider eating mostly fruit is because we are designed to eat mostly fruit. And as humans, we are glucose machines, glucose being sugar. Every cell in our body needs sugar to function properly. Our brain runs on sugar. So many people are like, no, the brain runs on fat. The brain runs on sugar. All of our muscles need sugar. Our heart is a muscle. Our heart needs sugar. Everything needs sugar. And most people are so glucose starved, they are not getting enough sugar in their day-to-day diet. And then the sugar they are getting is from processed artificial sugar sources, mm-hmm. which isn't quite the same thing as the sugar from fruit, which sugar in fruit occurs through photosynthesis. And that is obviously from the sunlight hitting the fruit tree and hitting the fruit. So we run on sugar. And that's why, you know, humans can tolerate and thrive doing high amounts of fruit. Also, fruit is the only food group that you could survive off eating that group of food alone. It contains everything we need to survive. You couldn't do that with vegetables. You would end up lacking in nutrients if you did that with vegetables. But fruits are really perfectly designed with the right amount of fats that we need, the right amount of protein, aka amino acids, and then obviously lots of carbohydrates from their natural sugar.
Yeah, it really is nature's perfect food.
Yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about the raw aspect as well? Why raw living foods are so powerful and what happens when we cook the foods?
Absolutely, yeah. So there's two components to raw living foods as to why I was convinced to be mostly raw. The first is the light aspect. So a lot of raw foods contain something called biophotons. And there's, you know, it's a very like early stage area of study. I mean, there's not a ton of research, but I also don't think you need a ton of research. A lot of it's like kind of common sense. Like if you see the evidence that's out there, it's like, okay, like what else? Yeah. What more do you really need? And so fruits and herbs and any raw veggies, they are the highest in what's called biophotons, which essentially is light. And we consume light the more raw foods we are eating. So we're essentially eating packaged sunlight. These things sat out in the sun for a long time. They absorbed sunlight. That's what caused them to, you know, all of them to mature, to develop all the vitamins and minerals that we can then eat. The other component as to why raw living foods is so amazing is this enzyme nutrition theory. And that's not a theory, but a viewpoint. And when you're eating raw, the food is in its natural state. You haven't heated it. You haven't altered it in any way. And it contains all the enzymes that our bodies need to digest and break down that food. So we eat a banana and there's enzymes in that banana that helps our body break it down, making it so much more energy efficient for our body because everything it needs is in that banana. You know, you could say the same for carrots. And actually, this rule even applies to if you were to eat raw meat or raw dairy. So this kind of extends beyond even just plant-based raw eating. And I'm not saying to eat raw meat because really humans aren't designed to, but it's really fascinating when you start to learn about this, about enzyme nutrition. So when you cook food, the second you cook it, you kill all those enzymes, those living enzymes in the food. So say you're going to cook some spinach. And now all the enzymes that were needed for digestion are now killed because you heated it. So when we eat that spinach, our body now has to produce enzymes, which does start in our saliva in the mouth, has to produce enzymes to break that food down, which takes more energy from our body. And I'm blanking on the doctor's name right now who wrote the book about this, but he basically makes the argument that the human body was never designed to produce its own enzymes all the time. Maybe once in a while, yeah. But we were designed to get the enzymes in our food and utilize our other energy that our body has for protecting us from disease and repair. So now that we live in a world where most people are eating the majority of cooked food, he says, no wonder there's so much disease, because our body is now having to take on this whole other job of making enzymes day in and day out for digestion, which it wasn't really meant to do in the first place.
Yeah, and that's probably why I know people who study this, they say our enzymes start to decrease as we age. And so there's this big conundrum of, well, why do we have a finite amount of enzymes? Why does it go down? And that to me is a perfect explanation of why. It's like we're meant to get them from our food. And when we have those enzymes in the food, it takes so much stress off the body. But I love that explanation. I love how you broke that down. And you can really feel the difference too. Like, go out and try it. See what your own experience tells you. Like, if you eat a fresh picked orange, you feel alive. You can feel the sunlight. Whereas I'm noticing now, it's like I might crave the taste of something cooked, like cooked veggies, cooked potatoes or rice, but you don't feel as good. You feel kind of dim and dead inside, almost like very heavy and sluggish.
Yes, sluggish and heavy for sure. Yeah. And cooked food's addicting. Like, I don't know if you noticed this, but when I eat cooked, like when I have a cooked dinner, it's like for the next few nights, that's what I want. All I want is cooked dinners. It's like nothing else sounds good. So it's like I have to sometimes break that and be like, okay, no, tonight we're not going to eat cooked food. We are going to have like a salad or something. And then it's like, okay, now I'm back into like the rhythm of like raw foods for dinner.
Totally. And on that note, something I wanted to ask you about is salt, because salt is very stimulating. It's very addicting. And if you study people like Arnold Arendt, there's no doubt salt is it's a mucus former and an acid former. But I think you do tend to hear varying opinions in kind of the raw foodist community. So what are your thoughts on salt? How does it affect the body? And I know you said you do aminos. Do you ever do salt from time to time?
So I never add salt to my food. If I get salt, it's because I made a dressing with coconut aminos. Or maybe if I'm out at like a restaurant and I order guacamole and they put salt in it, then that's fine. I'll have it. I'm not like a stickler that, oh, I can't eat this. There's salt in it. Mm-hmm. But I don't salt my food. I don't ever add it. Obviously, the body does need sodium. I am pretty active. So, I mean, I don't really think too much about salt. Like, have I ever had my sodium levels tested? No, maybe they're low. I don't know. I don't feel that. I feel like I would have cravings for salt and I would figure that out. I don't crave salt. To me, and in the research that I've done, salt does dehydrate the body and it does tend to thicken the blood. Obviously, that happens when we get dehydrated. And salt also messes with our taste buds and prevents us from being able to taste anything else but more salt. And I have found that like last winter, so like, yeah, like January, February of this year, I was really into rice for dinner. Like I went through like, again, like a fixation for like 2 weeks. I just had rice for dinner every night. And when I have rice, I like to put coconut aminos on it. And I realized the only reason I wanted rice was because I wanted the coconut aminos. I was like getting addicted to the salt and the aminos. And I'm like, all right, we gotta stop this. But I do make sure that I try to drink like, you know, green juices, like, you know, whether it's even cucumber juice, celery juice. That has a good amount of sodium. And also I make sure like I incorporate savory fruits into my dinners. Like tomatoes have a great amount of sodium. Like if I ever am craving salt, I could usually eat like a good bowl of cherry tomatoes and then I'm like, okay, I'm not craving salt anymore. So it's kind of, my view is it's like, why don't you try to get the salt as much as you can through the foods in your diet? If you find that your body needs more, then you can go ahead and salt with like, you know, Celtic salt or like a really high quality like sea salt. But I don't think it's necessary. But then again, everyone is a little bit different. And sometimes maybe it is necessary for short periods of time. But I don't think that salt is necessary all the time. Because it does. It messes with your taste buds. And you want to be able to taste all the flavors of the fruits and vegetables. And I think that's also why I appreciate everything I eat so much more, because I am truly tasting it. Like there's nothing interfering with my palate. And I can tell like when this fruit is like really better than another fruit, or this salad combination is really good because there's no salt interfering. So,
yeah, absolutely. And my own research on this, I learned this from a guy named Richard Anderson, is that obviously we need sodium. Yeah. We need it to buffer acids, but we don't need it in the form of table salt, which is sodium chloride. What we actually need is its organic form when it's bound to a protein, which only happens through the plant kingdom. So when we're eating fruits and veggies, we're getting plenty of sodium. It just doesn't taste salty because it's not in the form of table salt.
100%.
So I think that's an important distinction for people, because most people think sodium means salt, but it's really that bond that makes it particularly, it makes it taste good, but it also makes it somewhat damaging to the body. And so just going back now to what you were talking about earlier in your own story with candida and its connection to sugar, this is something that you suffered from. And on a personal note, I was on tons of rounds of antibiotics multiple times a year as a kid. Every time I got sick, it would end in a sinus infection and another round of antibiotics. But obviously this led to a big imbalance in my own gut bacteria and a lot of health problems down the road that I suspect were caused by this. And, you know, that imbalance may even persist to this day. Who knows? But conventional wisdom, I think even the top holistic nutritionists say that if you have a candida overgrowth, you need to cut out all fruit, all sugar, because yeast feeds on sugar. But it sounds to me that in your research and your experience, you found something a little bit different. So what actually fuels the candida overgrowth, and are we safe to eat fruit if we suspect we're dealing with a gut imbalance?
Yeah, so what actually fuels candida, one is sure processed sugar does, because the way processed sugar is absorbed is different than the way fruit sugar is absorbed. You know, a lot of people will say, well, if you look at the molecule of processed sugar versus fruit sugar, it's the same. And sure, on some chemical level, that's true, but still the way our body absorbs them is different. So candida resides in the small intestine. It's not in our stomach. It's in the small intestine. When we eat fruit, again, it contains all those amazing enzymes. It's so bioavailable to our body. The second we eat it, the sugar in the fruit gets absorbed almost instantaneously in the stomach. So the sugar in the fruit isn't even really reaching the small intestine, which is where the candida is anyway. So there's really then not a huge argument as to fruit feeding candida. Mm-hmm. Versus, again, processed sugar is not absorbed in the gut, and it takes longer to absorb because it is different to an extent. And then with fats and protein, so a lot of times when you have candida, they try to have you like increase like your fat intake or, you know, just your protein intake. In my case, the naturopath I was working with was just like, well, just put like coconut oil on everything, like everything you cook. And so I was dousing everything in coconut oil, like, oh my gosh. And that creates a different type of imbalance, and you're allowing any unproductive bacteria to thrive in the gut and the intestinal tract. And when that bacteria can thrive, it just creates the perfect balance for the candida to continue to thrive. Versus if you had more of the beneficial bacteria thriving, it would keep candida in check. Because obviously we do need some candida. Candida does play a role in digestion. The problem is when it gets overgrown. We don't want candida to be overgrown. And so to keep it in check, you need as much beneficial bacteria in the gut as possible. And that's not going to happen from protein and fats. It's just those aren't gut. Those aren't the type of foods that create good bacteria diversity in the gut. You want as much diverse bacteria in the gut as possible. The more diversity, the stronger of a microbiome you have.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great point, that it's the proteins and the fats that tend to stick around in the digestive tract, and then they almost start to putrefy in the small intestine and lead to a bunch of more negative bacteria overgrowth. And that's a great point too about the sugar being absorbed in the stomach. I had never really connected the dots on that to how would it feed candida in the small intestine if it's not there to begin with.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Something else I wanted to get your perspective on is hormonal health and reproductive health. Part of the reason I ask is because my sister is a holistic practitioner as well, and one of the areas she's really interested in is helping women work with the natural cycles and the rhythms of their body. And one thing I hear very commonly from women on a fruit-based high raw diet, which I can't personally attest to, but I hear that their period symptoms, things like cramping, nausea, things of that nature, tend to completely disappear. Some will even go so far as to say that they still have a healthy ovulation, but they have no menstruation in terms of the heavy bleed that we consider so normal. So what's your experience been with hormonal health, and how can women really start to work with the cycles of their body?
Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the things that I was dealing with prior to getting diagnosed with Lyme disease is I had polycystic ovarian syndrome. So I had super painful periods. I had cysts on my ovaries. So that I was dealing with a lot of hormonal imbalance even prior to like having Lyme disease. And obviously once I got diagnosed with Lyme disease, I kind of like ignored all of the hormone stuff. Cause I'm like, I got to deal with this. Like I have so many things I have to address. But what was really cool was when I started adding more fruit to my diet and really changing everything, my hormones just seemed to balance all on their own. My period got regular. I wasn't having painful periods, and I would get such painful periods that I would be nauseous and I wouldn't be able to stand up and I would just have to lay down usually the first day that I would get it. And that went away and my periods became totally regular. Nowadays I do use Natural Cycles. So it's a period tracking app. And I constantly am getting reminders from them that, oh, your period's like clockwork. Like everything is like right on time. And so I love that I have that because it's such great proof that the fruit and everything I'm doing is great for women's hormones and fertility because it's tracking the fact that I am ovulating because obviously you could get a period and not be ovulating and that's not good. Like you want to make sure you're actually ovulating. Like, for example, if you're on hormonal birth control, you bleed, but you have a withdrawal bleed because you're not really ovulating and that's a problem. And that means you're not actually fertile. So I like that it tracks ovulation and then also the period, obviously. So it does give me the reminders that, yeah, everything is balanced. And obviously, if my hormones were off, I would know because my period or my ovulation would be off. And, you know, a lot of people argue, especially for women, that you need a lot of fat in your diet to have balanced hormones, to support your period. And obviously, yeah, there are some people who are fruit-based or raw vegan who they do ovulate, but they don't actually bleed every month in the way, like you said, that we traditionally do bleed. I can say that that has happened to me. I have a very like light period. It's not super crazy heavy. It's like really, I barely notice. I mean, like I have it and it's there, but like, it's not annoying. Like I remember being in a stage of life where I was like, oh my God, like I don't like this. I'm on my period right now. It's annoying, but I don't have that anymore. It's just like, okay, it's just that time and you deal with it. And again, it's almost so seamless. Like I know it's there. I might have some mild cramping because again, there is something occurring in the body, but it shouldn't be unbearable. So it's like, I know it's there. It's not unbearable. I carry about my day. Obviously I notice that I'm maybe a little more tired around that time. Women do need more sleep when they're on their period. But it's, you know, as seamless as I think it could possibly be. And going back to what I was saying about the fats with women's hormones is fruit does contain some fat. So this idea that fruit has no fat isn't true. And like I mentioned earlier, fruit is a food that we can totally survive on because it does contain the right amount of fats that humans need. And if you wanted to think about it on a bit more of a spiritual level, this is obviously not super scientific, but I love this way of thinking about it is the fruit of a plant or a tree is the ovary of that tree. So that fruit contains all of the seeds for that tree to procreate and grow more trees. And so from a more spiritual way of looking at it, by eating the female reproductive organ of the tree, that is also going to help women's fertility and women's reproductive organs and hormones. And I think that that's why there are so many women who eat fruit-based and their hormones are totally fine. Because, again, nature, we are meant to kind of live in this symbiotic relationship with fruit. And nature is undefeated. It knows what it's doing. And so as women, if we just continue to eat lots of fruit, our fertility is going to be great. We're going to be just fine. You don't need to be eating all of these fats.
Yeah, wow. Thank you for sharing that and being so open, because this is a big problem these days and I think it's not talked about, but so many women, they are unbearable and they're not functioning the way that nature intended. And to me, it's like nature didn't design it to be this way. It shouldn't be unbearable. I think it's just one of those things that we have normalized that really is not natural. It's a result of our unnatural way of living. Things like, you know, when I tell people that when I'm good about my fruit-based diet, body odor disappears, and they're shocked. They're like, what do you mean you don't wear deodorant? That's gross.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, body odor shouldn't be a thing. Who says that's how nature intended for it to be?
Yeah.
It's more a byproduct of how we've come to live in our modern era. So that's one of my big questions in living this way is like, what's really possible for us and how could we live? And are our problems and our suffering, are they really this self-inflicted thing that we've considered normal? So kind of on this note, looking at your life as a whole since moving to this lifestyle, what are some of the other biggest benefits that you've noticed, whether that be physical, mental, emotional, spiritual?
Yeah, so I would say some of the physical is the energy. Like, I have incredible energy. I used to be very heavily caffeine reliant. You know, I didn't mention, but I was keto for a while, kind of right before all of my health problems started, which I think contributed to it. But I needed caffeine to get through my day, which most people who are keto need caffeine to get through their day. They can't, like, there's almost no keto person who's not heavily caffeinated. And then there's no fruit-based person who is caffeinated because you have so much energy, you don't even.
Right. Well, you need the, if you don't have sugar, you need the caffeine to stimulate your adrenals, right?
100%. Yeah. So your body's looking for energy from somewhere. So yeah, the energy is awesome. The mental clarity is amazing. And the spiritual part, there is something so spiritual. And unless you eat this way and you go through it, it's almost hard to explain. And you might relate to this, but it's like this, again, you just feel like you're radiating light all the time and that you feel really light and vibrant. And more recently, I've really found this more deep connectedness with nature. And that's not like I'm like in nature all the time in the sense of like hiking all the time. I'm not really a big hiker, but I just feel so connected to like just the cycles of nature, whether it be like the sun or the moon, just all of it. I feel so connected to, we'll just say the cosmos, like I on this like higher spiritual level. And it's really fascinating. It sounds so silly and crazy, but I cannot explain it. And it's funny, one of the things that I noticed like a month ago is like, I used to be extremely afraid of spiders when I was like, maybe 4 or 5, I got bit by a recluse spider. And those are very poisonous spiders. And my mom didn't know that it was a spider bite at the time. And she popped it and it released the venom into my body. And I like had convulsions and I had to go to the hospital. It was a whole thing. And I don't really remember. I was so young. The only thing I remember is I remember what the bite looked like on my arm. But ever since then, I was like always terrified of spiders, like so terrified. Like I would just could not function if I knew there was a spider somewhere. And now, like, little things with insects and spiders, I'm just like, oh, there's a spider. All right, well, either I'll put it outside, and sometimes I just leave it there. I'm just like, whatever, it'll find its way outside. Like, I'm not that worried about it. And I think it just comes to being a little bit more connected to things that I'm just like, okay, you're playing a role. You're doing your job. You're not bothering me. You're not going to hurt me. So just go about your life.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I used to kill bugs and flies in my apartment like it was nothing. And now it makes me sad. I'm like, I don't want to contribute to that. I just, you know, and I agree that you really have to experience the benefits yourself to really understand, because it does sound very, you know, woo and out there, but you really do. You feel more connected to people, to nature. I feel like I can almost talk to trees now. And with the fears too, that's something that I didn't really expect when I came on this diet, is the emotional impact. Okay. I felt like I went through a few months of the physical detoxification, where all the physical waste was leaving my body. And then what I didn't expect is all these emotions started to come up from early childhood, like old traumas and wounds and resentments. And it's like they all started bubbling to the surface for healing. But since then, I'm more happy. I'm less moody and angry and impulsive. And I'm, you know, life flows. And I think when you're coming from a place of wholeness and health, it's like you tend to attract things and experiences that you want. What I noticed is when I was not healthy, I was struggling to just make it through the day. I was always living from lack and not enough energy, not enough time, not enough this or that. And I drew experiences to me that reflected that. And things would just, you know, one little thing in the day and your whole day is ruined. Things break just like that. And so I just find that I'm more in harmony with life and attracting the experiences that I want to have. And so just kind of wrapping up this diet portion. I'd imagine that as a nutritionist, you probably get clients who come to you from time to time who say, okay, I want your help solving this health problem and getting rid of my symptoms, but I'm not sure about going all in on sort of the lifestyle that you're on. So my question is for maybe the average listener who may be in this boat of, I just want to improve my health, but I'm not quite ready to go full fruit-based. What are some simple changes that people can start introducing that will move the needle in the right direction?
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually have, I have many clients who still keep meat in their diet. Like, not, most of my clients don't eat exactly like me. They maybe eat more fruit, but they don't necessarily eat like me exactly. But I would say the one change is just at least start your day with fruit. Like, for breakfast, just have fruit. I know you're going to be like, yeah, but we have to start our day with protein. We need a protein breakfast. Just eat fruit. Just eat whatever fruit you want, as much of it as you want. And, you know, take some trial and error. You're going to have to figure out how much fruit is going to fill you up for breakfast. But make that change, because that will make such a difference.
Agreed. That's what I tell people, too. Thank you for that. And so this is a great transition into some of the other aspects of healing, because health is not just about what we eat. It is an important part of the equation, but it's not everything. And I think you and I are both in agreement that one of the most important elements for our health is the sun. We are light and sound beings. The ancients understood this. They worshiped the sun. I think we tend to think that they were these primitive, unsophisticated beings, but they were so connected spiritually. So what a, you know, what a travesty it's been that we're told the sun causes cancer and we need to lather all these poisonous chemicals on our skin to block ourselves from what's really the source of all life and energy on this planet. So
exactly.
Talk to us about the physical and also the spiritual power of the sun and why we should embrace it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I will say, I love your shirt. I caught the sun. Amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the sun, you made a good point. Like, ancient civilizations knew how important the sun was. They did. They worshipped it. They recognized that it was the source of life. And in so many ways, they were ahead of their time with how important the sun was. And I mean, if you start to look at the Egyptians and the Greeks and the Romans, they used it for healing. They built their cities just so that certain buildings were facing the way that the direction that the sun would rise, the way that the streets were designed was all around the sun. And this went into the earliest 20th century, and then things shifted. And so since the early 20th century till now, architecture does not take into account the sun. Maybe sometimes, but for the most part, it doesn't. And that really has taken a toll on human health. And it's so crazy. When you start to look into it, you're like, oh my God, like, people spend all these time in buildings and they're not even like working in harmony with the sun. And, you know, every, like, all forms of life, whether you're a plant or a dog or a human, we need light. Without light, we would not survive. And essentially, and going back to the nutrition part of it, eating raw foods is just another way we're consuming light. So we're either consuming light directly by standing in it and absorbing the sun's rays, or we're consuming light indirectly by eating raw foods or juicing the fruits and just drinking a bunch of light.
Right.
That's what our body is after. And I mean, even if you look at like the moment of conception, the second that the sperm fertilizes the egg, there is a chemical reaction with zinc and there's this flash of light. And it's so fascinating. Like, in order for life to exist, there has to be light. And so the fact that we are told today that, you know, being in the sun is toxic, it's going to give you skin cancer, you got to wear sunscreen, it's so backwards. Like, I saw this video of this one account that I follow, and he reposted it, and it was this dermatologist, and I'm assuming she knew the girl. The girl was like a teenager, and she was tan. You could see her little tan line, and she was asking her, why do you want to be tan? And she's like, because it looks good. And she's like, but do you know that that's going to give you cancer when you're older? And I'm like, No. Like, there's a reason why humans do find tan skin to be appealing. It's because when our skin is tanned, it increases the melanin in our skin. And that's actually protective to our body. It also is anti-aging. People don't talk about that a lot. So there's this whole other world of the sun and nourishing your skin with the sun that we just aren't aware of. But again, ancient civilizations knew this. They knew how important the sun was. And they knew when the sun was at its strongest, when it was at its weakest, they knew when to shade themselves from the sun, when to get into the sun. And really, there's no part of the day where the sun necessarily is like poisonous. Yes, there are a point where it's stronger. And depending on your, you know, how much tolerance you have to the sun, you may not be able to tolerate being in the sun when the UV index is 10, but that doesn't mean that you can't someday. And, you know, I don't know, I'm kind of getting off track of what you asked me, but a couple ways to help build your tolerance is wake up for the sunrise, see the sun when it's coming up. That resets your circadian rhythms. And so your eyes and your skin take information from that, and they recognize, okay, we're in the sun, it's morning, and that means when you go out in the sun at UV 10, your body can tolerate it much better. The other thing is all the artificial lights that we sit under for 90% of our day. Those actually cause way more skin cancer than the sun does, and nobody talks about that. Like, more people are spending time indoors than they are outside. But once the sun goes down, you shouldn't expose yourself to any artificial light. You should get like nighttime glasses that have like orange lenses. I've recently switched a lot of my lights in my house for like these full spectrum lights that have, there's three modes. One's like a sunset, like a campfire, and then nighttime. So as the sun starts to go down, you can adjust your lights. And then the nighttime one is a very red. And so it helps your brain know it's time to go to sleep. And if you can train your eyes and your body to know, okay, morning, lots of light, sun goes down, we don't look at a lot of light, you can tolerate being in the sun, no problem. But no one talks about the light part of it. It's just like, oh, the sun is poisonous, it's going to give you skin cancer. But it's very nuanced. It's not a black and white thing.
Right. Yeah. Those are great practical tips and takeaways. And I think it's also important to note the relationship between diet and skin health. I can say, I can share from my perspective, and then maybe you can share as well. Yeah. But when I was eating a standard American diet of processed sugars, high in seed oils, and very these inflammatory foods, I would burn like nobody's business. Like I would go outside in the sun for 30 minutes and I would just toast. And I couldn't tan. I was white and pasty my entire childhood.
Okay.
And then I switched up my diet and I cut all those things out. I started eating, you know, I wasn't even fruit-based or raw at the time. I just cleaned up my diet. And I noticed that all of a sudden I stopped burning. I go out in the sun for long periods of time. And I actually started to tan and look better too.
Yeah.
Is that what you found too?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, and so obviously everyone's tan that they'll get from the sun is gonna look a little different because we are different. So I do have Italian in me, so I do tan very easily. But since I've changed my diet, I do notice that my tan looks very different than it used to when I was in college and my early 20s and all of that. And I don't burn. And in fact, this was the first summer that when I was on vacation with my family in Mexico, I didn't wear any sunscreen. I did on my face. And obviously our face and neck, the skin there is much thinner than the rest of our body. And I do always recommend wearing a hat, putting sunscreen on that, because it tolerates the sun much differently. And, you know, for a long time, people always have kind of shielded their face from the sun for that reason. But the rest of our body can tolerate the sun. And so I didn't wear any sunscreen and I just kind of listened to the cues of my body. If my skin felt like, okay, maybe it's feeling red or it feels like we need to go in the shade, then I go in the shade. And then I'm like, okay, I'm good. I'll go back in the sun. And if you think about it, that's what animals do too. They lay in the sun, they go in the shade. They lay in the sun, they go. And I didn't burn. And you know, obviously, yeah, my diet plays such a huge role. Fruits help, all of their antioxidants help you tolerate sun exposure so much better. And if you think about it, fruits sitting on a tree in the hot, hot sun, because a lot of these are tropical fruits, they are grown in hot areas. And it's not like they're frying or melting off the tree from the sun. They're designed to withstand the heat of the sun. And they have nutrients for that. And then we eat those nutrients, and those nutrients help our skin tolerate being in the sun and not burn. But yeah, a lot of people, they don't spend much time in the sun. They don't eat very clean. And then once or twice a year, they go on vacation or they spend a lot of time in the sun and then they get burned. Their skin has not primed for it. All of the seed oils, which make you more prone to sunburn, and other inflammatory foods. Also, a lot of times people will travel, they'll be drinking alcohol.
Yeah, while right. That's what I was going to say.
That is the worst thing you can do. You are absolutely going to get burned. And when I was on my trip with my family, my brother, who's a little younger than me, he typically can get much more tan than me when we were growing up. He was always more tan than I was. But now I can get more tan than he can get because he still drinks alcohol and eats, you know, seed oils. And so he can still get tan because it is part of his, like, genetics. But I am now tanner than him because I don't drink alcohol and I eat so much fruit and my skin's just like, all right, give us all the sunlight.
Yeah, people don't believe me when I say what you eat affects how your skin shows up or your ability to tan. But it's so true. And this idea that the sun causes melanoma is just, it's ludicrous to me. Like, you know, look at all the animals, the lions and the zebras sitting out in the African savannah. Nobody gets melanoma except for us. So it's something we're doing and something in the last century because the sun hasn't changed in that time. And melanoma really only started popping up when we went to these unnatural lifestyles and when we started putting chemicals on our skin. Yes. So
yeah, the invention of sunscreen, there was a huge spike in melanoma. And obviously we know a lot of the chemicals in sunscreen actually cause skin cancer at much higher rates than the sun ever could. And then you think about it, you're spraying those chemicals on your skin and then you're sitting in the sun and letting those chemicals bake into your body. Like, that just does not make logical sense. So
yeah, horrible. Now, you are also a self-proclaimed fitness addict. And this is another very important element of health and healing, moving our bodies, giving it some sort of stimulus to adapt. And so what does this look like for you? And how do we optimize our fitness gains on this sort of a fruit-based high raw diet?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, being active is super important. You especially, I mean, especially as women, like having muscle mass is important. And as women age, it's even more important to maintain muscle mass. And so it's easier to start building muscle mass the younger you are so that when you reach around menopause age, you already have established a good amount of muscle mass to carry you through that. And obviously it helps with bone density as well. And as women enter menopause, you your bone density tends to drop because you're not making as much calcium or absorbing as much calcium. And so built muscle mass is important. It's also like helps with so many other things, not just that, but like you want muscle mass. Also, you want to be strong. You want to be able to do things. You don't want to look frail. And obviously, like even if you're not lifting weights, it's not like you're going to look frail per se. Find whatever workout speaks to you, but movement is so important. I mean, our bodies are designed to move. Even if you're just like, oh, I walk a lot every day. That's great. Like we're not meant to be sedentary. We are meant to move. And I mean, I even argue, I know they recommend like 10,000 steps a day. I'm like, I really think humans should be getting 20,000. Like, I think that's like really not even enough for the human species, but fine, 10. But my training looks like now it's a lot of, I do a lot of weight training. I do like sprints, sprint training as well. I'm not a great sprinter. I'm much more of a distance runner. That's more of my strong suit, but in the last couple of years, I've really pushed myself to sprint train. And so I love it. I'm not great at it by any means, but I love it so much. And also that's a very efficient way to get a workout in. You can do 20 minutes on the treadmill and do like 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, 20 seconds on, 20 seconds off. You can play around with the intervals, like 1-to-1 ratio intervals or 1-to-2 ratio intervals. And I mean, there's even studies that show that people who do 20 minutes of sprint intervals have better cardio endurance than someone who's going to go out and run for 45 minutes. So, you know, I definitely try to do a lot of different training now. I used to be I'd pigeonhole myself into one thing for a while, and now I just really balance it out. So 2 days a week, I'll go for like a 5-mile run. And then, you know, a couple other days I'll do sprint training. I'll do weight training with it. You know, I golf, not so much for the fitness aspect. I like the mental part of it, but it's also a way that I like to move my body in different movements. And then I do dance, like heels dance classes, mostly that for like emotional movement, for feminine embodiment movement. But again, it's still a way to move your body differently and balance everything out and just, again, use muscles in different ways. And so, yeah, you don't have to necessarily be like, oh, I'm only going to do Pilates or I'm only going to do this. Like, do a bunch of different things, because the more you can train your body to use different muscles, and again, everything uses different muscles, and you want to make sure your muscles are well balanced, which is actually something I am personally working on right now. Some of my muscles aren't so well balanced because my strong suit is longer distance running. So like my glutes don't activate enough when I lift weights, or like part of my like hip flexor won't activate because it's just weak. So like I'm really working on like targeting some of those weaker muscles. And I do find it fun and kind of almost like a challenge to do that. So
yeah, I love that variety that you include. And that's important to really spice things up and do something that's exciting to you and fun, and it's going to be sustainable over the long term. And I also find that, I don't know if you've noticed this too, especially with your weight training, but I tend to recover very quickly on this diet. Like when when I first transitioned and my body wasn't tolerating heavier foods anymore, I was well into training for my first half Ironman triathlon. And I didn't think I could do it. I was afraid I was going to like pass out on the course if I didn't have protein.
Oh my gosh.
But that first one was like a testament to like, this is possible. And then I've done a few since. And every year I find with the progress that my body's made over that year, I recover quicker. I'm less sore after race day. I can, you know, I'm less sore after training.
Yeah.
Do you find that too, that your gains really can increase in a big way?
Totally, yeah. And I'll do something that I haven't done and I can feel my muscles are super fatigued in the moment and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be so sore tomorrow. And then I wake up and I'm like not that sore, if at all, because there are some days where I'm not. And I'm a little bit bummed. I'm like, man, I was really hoping to be super sore today. But I'm like, all right, I guess that is like, you know, it's just a testament to providing your body with all the nutrients. Because again, glucose is so good for muscle recovery. So when you're eating so much fruit, your body can just recover that much faster, like you said. So
totally. I love it. Now, another consideration on this lifestyle that I think we both wanted to get into is the social aspect. Hopefully in a few generations, more people will be living like you do. But at this moment in time, it's seen as very radical. And I think a big part of why people maybe fall off the wagon or don't get started with this is because of how challenging it can seem with things like social gatherings, family gatherings, friendships, dating. I have no problem being different from other people, but this is still something that I find myself having trouble with is, you know, if I'm going to a wedding or a nice restaurant or somebody offers me something they cooked, how do I not step on toes while still being true to myself? So what's your experience been with this? Can we still find ways to enjoy a fulfilling social life while living this way?
Absolutely. Yes. I would say it takes a little bit more planning and it takes confidence and being very sure of this is just what I do and this is how I eat. If you are feeling unsure or a little insecure about it, it's going to be easier to kind of like fall off and just, you know, do what everyone else is doing. And I mean, I was there too. It's not like I was perfect at it at first. Like, I would feel very awkward or uncomfortable if I was in a social situation and I wasn't eating what everyone else was eating, or, you know, if I said no to someone offering me something, I would feel bad. So I would just give in. And I realized that I was just being a people pleaser. Like, I wasn't doing that for anyone else. Like, I was doing it for everyone else, not for myself. And then I would get frustrated for a while and I just then wouldn't go to social things because it was like, oh, I just don't want to deal with it. But I was like, but that's also not the answer, because socializing is a huge part of life. And like, you know, there are going to be more people you interact with who don't eat like you than do. So I ended up just starting by eating before I would go to things and then just say no. Now I really don't care what people think, and I will just bring my food depending where it is, you know, but I'll just bring food with me, or I'll, you know, bring juice with me. I typically do eat dinner pretty early, like around like 4:30 or 5. I'm like very senior citizen in that sense. But it's great for digestion. So a lot of times when social things happen, it's usually after that. So I will have already eaten dinner and then I bring like a juice and I'll have that, or maybe I'll bring some fruit to snack on. And at this point, most people know me well enough. They don't question. But if you're in a place where people question, you know, you can be kind if someone's like offering you something and be like, oh my gosh, that looks amazing, thank you so much, but I actually don't eat that. But, you know, I appreciate that you like kept me in mind, because it doesn't have to be a whole big thing, even though it feels like it sometimes. But, you know, and eventually people might catch on to be like, oh, okay, you know, Chad doesn't eat this, but he does eat watermelon. So I'll just make sure I bring watermelon next time. So people eventually catch on and learn, because if people want to make you something or having you over, they'll want to get you something you like. So eventually it does get easier, but it's hard for a while. And again, restaurants are hard because you just feel weird. But the less weird you feel, or like the less weird you make it, eventually it becomes way less awkward. And just act like you've done this a million times and it gets easier. Dating is hard. Like, I don't know if you're dating. I've kind of been recently getting back into dating, and it's hard. Everyone's like, oh, let's go for a drink. Let's go to dinner. So those are two things that I'm always like, oh, I don't really like to do that on a first date. I've learned to navigate the drinks thing, and I'll just go make sure there's a place with mocktails, or I've brought juice with me, and just like ask for a wine glass and pour it in there, and then like they'll have their cocktail. And because like I don't mind if someone eats differently than me. Like, it doesn't bother me at all. But you know, I would expect them to be supportive of the way I eat and the way that I would support the way that they eat. But dating's a little harder because at least with your friends or with your family, you're in a group setting. So if you're the only one who just brought something else, everyone else is still eating their thing or ordering off the menu. It's not a big deal, but it is hard if it's just you and one other person, especially if the other person, has no idea what to expect. It can be a little awkward. So I always say, like, at least for a first date, try, like, if it makes you feel better, don't do dinner, which I don't. And so I say it does make me feel better not to do dinner. Drinks are fine if you get a place with mocktails, but usually I'm like, let's just like go for a walk for like a first date or something like that. And then, yeah, then it also gives me an opportunity to explain, oh, this is like how I eat. This is what I do. And then if they don't like it, then they can decide, okay, yeah, I don't want to go out with this person again. Because yeah, I mean, I'm not for everybody. We're not going to be for everybody, but at least then it gives you an opportunity to still be open and then not, and then let them decide if they think you're too crazy or not with your diet.
Yeah, those are great tips. And I think it's more the fear of what's going to happen than what actually happens. I find that when I stress out about like, oh my goodness, what are people going to say? What are they going to think? I'm going to look weird. That's so much worse. You know, the event passes and it's like, it was no big deal. People I find are genuinely curious about the way that I live, as long as I'm not being obnoxious and, you know, pushing it on people and being rude about what I can and can't eat. It's like, if you kind of just do your thing and mind your business, answer questions when people ask them, like, people really are curious, because if most people have never seen anybody live this way and they just want to learn more. So.
Exactly. And I'm sure you constantly get the question, well, isn't that too much sugar? Isn't there a lot of sugar in that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you get your protein?
Yep.
Are you worried about diabetes?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, all the classic ones. But no, I always appreciate that, and I never get bothered by it, because I'm happy to educate people based on what I've experienced. And I think really at the heart of it, it's like there's this fear of loss. Like, people feel like they need to give something up in order to live like this. It's like, I don't want to give up my pleasures of eating food. I don't want to give up my social life, because what I think we're really all after is freedom. But it really, like, it begs a question, what is true freedom? Is freedom the ability to just do whatever you want with no rules and restriction? That's like, I have freedom to go to McDonald's at 1 a.m. after I've been out drinking with my friends.
Yeah.
Because I think this is what people a lot of times associate freedom with. But I would argue that's not true freedom, because, you know, when we're unhappy and unhealthy as a result, when those choices catch up, we're now a slave to those decisions. So I think what I tell people is, yeah, it's uncomfortable to make these changes up front. But as I think it's Michael Beckwith who says, it takes discipline at first, but that discipline turns to blissipline, where it becomes something that you want to do because you experience a freedom that you, like, you never knew before. It's like, oh, this is what it is to be happy and healthy and free. So what's your definition of true freedom, and how has this lifestyle really just opened you up to new levels of joy and the ability to create the life you want?
Yeah, well, to me, true freedom is being able to do the things that you enjoy and enjoy them fully, like without any obstacle. And to me, eating the way I do allows me to have a quality of life to do the things that make me happy, versus like you said if I was out drinking with friends and getting McDonald's, I would have symptoms that would hinder my quality of life. So to me, freedom is having the best quality of life that I could possibly have for as long as I can have it. So, you know, a lot of things, decisions I make now is because I also keep in mind myself 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the road. Like, what do I want my life to look like at that point? And that also, to me, encompasses true freedom because I want to be mobile. I want to be vibrant and thriving in 30 years as well. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned something earlier about how even eating this way, there's like you attract more good things, and you talked about flow, and the word flow really stuck out to me because that is something that I've even used to describe is I feel like I am in a flow. Like, yeah, things are flowing through me. I also feel very magnetic because, again, I feel like I am radiating light. And so I'm attracting light. I'm bringing more light into my life. Not saying my life is perfect and I don't deal with human emotions, normal human emotions as well. I have my more sticky days. I'm human. But oh, yeah, for the most part, like, my emotions are very stable, and I just feel like I'm all, like, everything flows, and I just attract more of the brightness that I am consuming. It comes back to me, in various ways. And, again, going back, it's so hard to put into words unless you really know. It's just like this warmth feeling, this bright feeling. Like, you just kind of feel like you're at home in your body. Mm. It's a very interesting feeling, but I think that's the best way I can put it, is you just feel totally at home in your body. Like, everything is just thriving and working as it should.
Yeah, that's very well put. And I know exactly what you mean. I hope more people will be inspired to really go for it themselves. But Taylor, where can people find you and learn about any offerings that you might have right now?
Yeah, so you guys can find me on Instagram. My handle is TD_nutrition. That's where I am the most active, and anything that I have going on will be posted there. Or there is my website, which is fruitgirlfit.com. That has all information about wanting to work with me and what that looks like. But any announcements and things that I might be releasing will be on Instagram. And I am actually releasing a course next week. I was hoping to do it this week, but I didn't get to it. I'm almost done with it. But a course called The Sunshine Diet, and it will be released next week. And it's all about the sun and nourishing your body with direct and indirect light, the history of the sun. I'm really excited about it. I've been working on it all summer, and it's kind of finally coming together. So that, look out for that next week.
Ooh, I might have to check that out. That sounds fascinating, right up my alley.
Yeah.
And so, Taylor, final two questions that we ask everybody on this podcast. Number one, in the spirit of this being the Supernatural Podcast, what does it mean to you to live an extraordinary life?
Oh, that's a good question. I think for me, living an extraordinary life is being a light to the world, like adding positivity back into the world. My dad would always tell me, whatever you do with your life, you need to ask yourself, what are you contributing to the world? And of course, as a kid, I was always just like, well, I just want to make money. I don't really care like what I do, like whatever. And now I'm like, I know what he means. And so I do make sure that everything that I'm doing is to add some type of light and positivity back into the world.
I love that. And finally, if you had one message to share with humanity at this very interesting time in our history, what would that be?
Stop worrying about protein. Everything does not revolve around protein. You will be so much happier if you stop worrying about it and just eat foods that make you happy and feel bright.
100%. And I think that is definitely where we are moving physically and spiritually as a species. And I'm excited. I just want to thank you for joining me today. It's been such a fun conversation and a pleasure to connect with you. And I just want
to, thanks for having me.
Yeah, really honor the work you're doing as a pioneer and a way shower in this space for others. So thank you for sharing your light with all of us. And thanks for joining me.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to give us a rating, give us a review, whatever you feel called to do, anything helps us out and helps us get this message to the people who really need to hear it. So thank you so much for joining us on this episode. Take care, and we'll see you soon.